I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Here's the basic premise of Mystery Science Theater 3000. A human test subject has been imprisoned on a spaceship by some mad scientists who force him to watch bad movies to see which one will drive him completely crazy. He has several robot friends who watch with him, and in order to keep themselves sane, they riff or talk back at the screen, skewering what they're watching. It is hilarious. That was the brainchild of our guest, Joel Hodgson, who played the first test subject, Joel Robinson. The show debuted on a UHF TV station in Minneapolis in 1988 and quickly developed a cult following. It has also had a number of lives, eventually ending up on Netflix. Hodgson has taken MST 3000 on tour and is performing a live version of the show tonight at the Merriam Theater in Center City, Philadelphia, where viewers will get to watch either Circus of Horrors or No Retreat, No Surrender with, of course, commentary. Well, we had a lot of laughs pulling clips together for today's show. We want to talk with Joel about the genesis of the show, its longevity, and a bit about his life in comedy. And it's a great pleasure, Joel Hodgson, to have you with us on Radio Times.
Marty, thanks so much. And I got to tell you, I'm a huge fan. I live in the area, and I'm an NPR junkie, so I'm really excited to be here.
Well, we appreciate the fact that we don't have to talk about politics this hour on Radio Times, taking a needed break. You know, it's so interesting to sort of see and hear who's such a fan of the show, and I include myself in that. But in many ways, it's a family show because I know so many generations of people or fathers and sons who discovered this, and it's something that has brought people, bonded people together.
Oh, yeah. I'm thrilled about that. And I think because there's puppets, there's an obligation there to make it really smart and funny family entertainment. So yeah, I'm thrilled that all that's gotten to happen. I'm kind of over the moon. I mean, just everything that's happened. And
Who would have thought, right? 30 years ago.
Yeah, especially over the last 5 years to bring it back and have it on Netflix. And actually, we're 100% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, all 20 episodes. We're the third highest rated show on Netflix right now based on that.
Well, let's go back to the beginning, to the origin story. You were a kid growing up in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Did you watch a lot of TV?
Yeah, I was a real TV junkie and watched anything and everything. And it was pretty Spartan back there in Wisconsin, some of the programming. So I saw a lot of, like, I'd watch The Farm Report. I'd watch The Polka Show, the Dairyland Jubilee, it was called. I watched it all, and I really couldn't tell. I mean, somebody asked me the other day, did you always love bad movies? And when I was a kid, there was no such thing as a bad movie. I didn't understand the concept. So I watched everything, and I liked everything.
And liked it just because it was on TV?
Yeah, I think so. I just was really always fascinated with it and fascinated with show business, but it wasn't very clear being in the Midwest how you got into show business, so it took a long time to figure it out.
I read, sometimes you have to be careful what you read about people, that you grew up in an evangelical family, is that true?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Went to church
on
a regular basis?
Oh, yeah, and it was so much, such a big part of who I am now and how I got into it, because the church then, and I suspect still now, was so much about entertaining each other, and it was amazing. But my dad was like the guy who would MC weddings, and he was hilarious, and he would create a show around a wedding and a couple, and I started doing magic for like father-daughter banquets and Cub Scout troops, and the church was so nurturing to me and so encouraging, and it was great. But the first time I saw a projected movie was in church. The first time I heard a live band was in church, or saw a magician. It was just like all these things up close and personal I got to see because of that. So I'm super grateful about it. And in the Midwest, they're so, oh, boy, Joel, you're so talented. We really got to do something with you. And so I always look back really fondly about that and really appreciate it, yeah.
You said your dad was hilarious.
Yeah.
Were you hilarious as a kid?
Oh, no. And No, and I, you know, it's kind of like with comedy, you kind of learn it. You kind of, I mean, I was always attracted to the really funny people and wanted to be around them. And I learned some of their tricks. So that was kind of it. That's really it. It's like smart people. If you hang out with them enough, you can kind of figure out what they're doing.
You were a young magician, also a ventriloquist, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was trying everything. I just didn't know how it all worked. So I would. Right. I learned how to juggle. I could ride the unicycle. I did impressions.
You could have been in the circus.
I could have been in the circus, and I actually made my own circus, and it's going to be at the Miriam tonight. But yeah, so I was just fascinated with it all, and there was no clear path back then how you did it. And so I was trying everything, and you know, finally around college, I moved to Minneapolis, and that was right around when the comedy boom in the 80s was happening, and I was fortunate enough to kind of get in on that. So.
In fact, you went to L.A. for a while, and we were watching some of your performance on some early David Letterman shows. I mean, you made your debut there, and I think you were there a couple of times. It doesn't really work on the radio because it is so visual. You're very deadpan and
and
funny.
And deadpan works. Fortunately, works great on the radio. You can
exactly.
tell. And I'm dressed for the radio.
Of
fortunately,
course.
I noticed I was looking around at everybody, and I go, I kind of fit in here. I actually can. You can wear what you want on the radio.
Did you enjoy, though, doing stand-up? I mean, it was a quirky and performance that you
I had. I had a charmed career as a stand-up. I think because my stand-up was really unique, I got kind of taken care of by some wonderful and mentored by some brilliant comics, people like Jerry Seinfeld and people like Gary Shandling.
Yeah.
And those guys, I think they saw something and were – really encouraging. I used to, you know, Gary Shandling helped me find my manager, who is Brad Gray, who went on to be the head of Paramount, and he we hung out, and he showed me how he wrote. He wrote three really funny jokes every day, and he kind of helped me learn how to work the room. Like, he just goes, Joel, you're not moving your head around enough when you're doing stand-up. You got to run your head around and look at the audience. You're just staring into space. Look at people. And so I was really lucky to get to have people like him and of course, Seinfeld, too, downstream. We became friends and got to work together.
In fact, later in the show, we'll play a little clip of you and Jerry Seinfeld in his comedians in cars getting coffee, talking about ketchup, of all things. But nonetheless, you're in L.A., but you moved back to the Midwest, back to Minneapolis.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where MST3K is born.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, there is an incident in L.A. that happened, and I had a career as a stand-up. I was really lucky. I got on Letterman, and then I got on HBO's Young Comedian Special, which was really this the one show I really wanted to get on, and it broke a lot of great comedians like Seinfeld and Harry Anderson and Pee Wee Herman and all that, and I was really grateful to get to do that. But I had a career as a stand-up and did, like you said, Letterman. I did four Lettermans, and I did four Saturday Night Lives and the Young Comedian Special, and was really active touring, and I got offered a sitcom. Brandon Tartikoff, who was the head of NBC at that time, approached me, and it was a Michael J. Fox vehicle, right? And it was called High School USA, and I was some character on there. And I read the script, and because I was a stand-up, I had always done my own stuff, and I didn't think it was funny. And I told them, and I said, I don't think I should do this.
It just wasn't funny enough.
Well, I didn't tell him it wasn't funny. I didn't really have the guts to do that, but I said it's not for me. And the next thing I knew, they doubled the money.
Wow.
And instead of attracting me, it repelled me, and I realized my opinion means nothing in Hollywood, and there's enough money there that could make me do stuff I didn't want to do. And that kind of ended in me passing on the show, but also just leaving Hollywood and wanting to go back to Minneapolis and think about my career. And I started doing stuff. I started actually doing these sculpture projects and making robots out of found objects. So that's where kind of the beginning of MST started.
But there must have been some kind of light bulb moment where you said, I think I can create a show where we look at bad movies and we riff on them. And,
yes,
you know, there must have been something
well,
that
I can
just went
tell you that,
bingo.
I can tell you that story. So when I moved back to Minneapolis, I was just trying to figure out what to do, and Seinfeld came to town. And we were friends from L.A., and he did his act at a club called the Comedy Gallery, and I was hanging out, and after the show, I just decided to tell him the pictures I was seeing when I was listening to him. And he said, you know what? I just booked my first HBO special. I want you to help me write it. And so over the course of about 6 months, we would get together, whether he was out doing stand-up in Minneapolis or I'd come to L.A. and stay at his place and we'd work on it. And we wrote his first special, and he was very gracious to do that because he really is so great. He doesn't need help writing a special, but he was very gracious to include me. And I had kind of quit stand-up at that point. I really was out of it, and I'm trying to think, what am I now? Am I supposed to be a writer? Who am I? What am I supposed to do? And after we did the special, I wrote the science fiction comedy for him. And I pitched it to him in L.A., and he just looked at me and he said, this isn't a show for me, Joel. This is a show for you. And that was when I realized I didn't really want I wasn't kind of expecting that, and I thought I was kind of done performing. And I realized he's right. He's not a science. If we know the way we know Seinfeld, science fiction is the furthest thing from
exactly,
Seinfeld.
Exactly.
He's absolutely right. And that was the beginning of me thinking about what is it I'm supposed to do. And so over time, and a lot of it had to do with him because he was so gracious and mm-hmm. I loved his work ethic and I loved what he was doing and he was happy. There were a lot of cynical people in comedy, and I just didn't like it. It was kind of bringing me down. So the guy had a lot to do with it. We're still friends, and I'm really grateful for him. And so then I started thinking, okay, well, I don't want to go to L.A., and I don't want to go to New York, and I don't want to pitch a show because really a show that's expensive, it's like asking for a bank loan. You have to go before people and go, I'm going to give you an idea that's so bulletproof, that's so funny and fantastic, it'll guarantee you'll get your money back. And I never believed that, yeah.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we will continue
I understand.
Can't do it.
I'll hold that thought. You're going to have to help me remember what I was saying, because it's so early in the morning for me.
I know. Okay. I'm doing my best here.
All right, sounds good. I'm ready.
You're listening to Radio Times, and our guest is Joel Hodgson. He is the creator, the mastermind behind Mystery Science Theater 3000, and he's bringing the live version of the show to the Miriam Theater tonight in Center City, Philadelphia. You can join our conversation 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Our guest this hour of the show is Joel Hodgson, and we're talking about the creation of Mystery Science Theater 3000. Let me just read a couple of comments, one from Adam. I started watching with my dad in the early 90s, and I still watch today. Thank you for the countless hours of entertainment. A Facebook comment from Margaret. Always love watching MST, and I'm a card-carrying Misty. My favorite robot is Tom Servo. Thanks to Joel for making me use my best brains to get all the jokes. So many wonderful hours were spent enjoying the show dialogue.
God, that's so sweet. Yeah.
So you're back in Minneapolis.
Oh,
you're trying to figure out what to do with your life.
Right.
Jerry Seinfeld has been helpful.
Yes.
And you're thinking of this show that becomes Mystery Science Theater 3000? Is there a short version?
Yes. I just realized I needed to make the cheapest show possible. And I thought about kids' TV, local TV shows, and also monster shows that were local shows like the The Maneater of Manioc that was done locally. Saturday Night Dead was from the Philadelphia area.
Yep.
But so that was kind of my model. And the missing piece was the idea of using public domain bad movies and riffing on them. So that became kind of the model that I created. And because I was making, when we last talked, I was making robots out of found objects.
Yes.
And I knew they would make really good puppets. And that kind of played into my younger life as a ventriloquist. If you think of a ventriloquist with a dummy on each knee, that's what MST is really. It's a guy sitting there with two wisecracking robots. So that all came from that, and we did it locally. In a UHF channel in Minneapolis, and it worked.
Well, let me. Not only do you lampoon or riff at really cheesy bad movies, but also at these kind of public service announcements.
And
certainly remember as a kid growing up that we go to school and you have to learn all about this really scary stuff. Here's a clip from Misty Shine's Theater, and this is featuring our guest, Joel Hodgson. This is back in 1991, and here Joel and the robots are watching a 1952 short film. It's called Appreciating Your Parents. You will hear both the narrator of Appreciating Your Parents and also the riffing.
This is the story of a boy named Tommy and how he learned all mother do for him.
Good.
This is Tommy's room. Can you guess what he's thinking?
What a dump!
Look how neat and straight his whole room is. Tommy's thinking hard because he hasn't done a thing to his room since he left for school this morning. And when he left, the room didn't look like this at all.
He's in the wrong house.
The toys on the shelves, bed neatly made, clothes put away. No, this morning it looked like this.
Had more of a Queen Anne theme to it.
Yeah.
Clothes scattered about. Toys on the floor.
Beer cans everywhere.
Yes, when Tommy went to school this morning, he left his room a mess. But now, everything is neat and straight.
Except for his mind.
Now, how do you suppose that happens?
What is this crap?
And that's not all. Yesterday, Tommy tore the sleeve of his favorite cowboy shirt.
In a prison
break. And now it's mended as good as new.
Tommy's the lathe of heaven.
His jacket had a button off. Now there's a new button. And you know, things of that sort don't happen just in Tommy's room. They happen all over the house.
It's called guilt, and boy, does it work.
And we know it was Mommy who mended Tommy's jacket, right?
Yeah.
Now, taking that as an example, I assume that's all scripted. I mean, it sounds very loose and is hilarious. But how much sort of goes into sort of deconstructing something like that and then putting in the commentary?
Well, I'll put it in the context of the show we're doing tonight at the Miriam, which is our live version of Mystery Science Theater. And when you come to the show and see it, there's about 700 riffs like that happen in the course of the movie. And to get to those 700 riffs, we have 10 writers, and they all produce about 700 riffs. So we start with 7,000 and then kind of cull the very best from those and put those into the thing. And that's how it's the easiest, best way to create a lot of comedy without a lot of stress. And so we do it with numbers and a lot of stuff, and then it kind of renders those ideas. And, you know, we have a lot of different kinds of people writing. It's half men and half women, so you get lots of different perspectives. And so that's kind of the secret, our secret sauce, how we do it. And then we'll...
Is there room for improv, or you really want to stick to the script?
Sure, when you do it live, especially because the audience reacts differently each day, and they could laugh over the setup for your next joke, because you can't stop the movie. Like, a comic can stop and let the audience laugh, but the movie keeps rolling.
Right.
So we're constantly pulling bits out, popping them in later downstream. And then there's just those happy accidents of saying things that happen, and then the audience reacting. And so it's a whole living, breathing thing. It's very different.
And tonight, is it Circus of Horrors or no?
No, it's No Retreat, No Surrender at 7 o'clock at the Miriam.
And why? Do you think that's a good movie for Philadelphia?
Well, listen, people have said it may be our best, funniest show. So it's kind of like, I'm really thrilled.
These are the greatest hits kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really thrilled. And I'll try to describe it to you. It's kind of like a knockoff of The Karate Kid with the ghost of Bruce Lee, and the guy who plays Bruce Lee looks nothing like Bruce Lee. So it's kind of like that, but I'm psyched because a lot of my friends are coming to this show, so I'm really psyched about it. This is going to be a barn burner tonight.
When it comes to bad movies, and everyone has their own definition, do all bad movies work under the magic of Mystery Science Theater?
I think so. I mean, the truth is, we can do it with any movie, you know, and it's just, you know, for us, it's about the original premise was I thought these B movies were adorable and really wonderful.
We have to love them, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Them? And so I really like them for that reason. So I always, you know, I mean, and I have to spend so much time with them when I'm writing with them. And so that's kind of the MO. But yeah, the reason we use those is because we can license them and it just works with the premise.
Yeah.
You know?
I read that Silent Running was the sort of basic, the original inspiration.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
True?
Well, to start with, it started, my original idea for it was called You Are Here. And it was kind of based on the Charlton Heston movie, Omega Man. And Omega Man was the early zombie movie. And he was a guy, he was one who was not infected and was not a zombie. And he used to go to a movie theater and watch Woodstock. And he'd go, look at all the people. And it was like, I go, oh, actually, that'd be great. I could be a guy in a abandoned TV studio running right. movies, hoping people are finding me and I'd have a robot. And then I said, I don't think I can make a zombie apocalypse funny. This was 30 years ago, and there weren't things like Shaun of the Dead and things like that. So then I kind of transposed the Douglas Trumbull film Silent Running, which stars Bruce Dern as this hippie in space with three robots. And so
Perfect. That's
kind of how I got to it, yeah.
That's Joel Hodgson, our guest on Radio Times today, the creator of Mystery Science Theater 3000. Again, on tour in Philadelphia at the Miriam Theater tonight in Center City, Philadelphia. We want to hear from you, especially if you are a Misty fan. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times and share some of your favorite moments from this 30-year running show.
Yeah.
Also, any films that you think really deserve this kind of treatment. I put out on Facebook actually yesterday, The Savage is Loose as a film.
Whoa,
that
I don't know that one.
Okay.
It?
Well,
what
we'll
happens?
Talk after the show.
Okay.
Let me play another clip. This is from Mystery Science Theater featuring our guests, and this is 1991, and this is Joel and the Robots. They're watching, this is another educational short film. It's called Speech, Using Your Voice, and it's from 1950.
Hey, it's Joe Mencken.
That every day someone loses a sale.
Or an arm.
Or creates a misunderstanding just because he does not speak intelligibly. In the next few minutes, we're
Sandy
going to
Rooney's
give you some
godfather.
Examples of good and bad speech and show you the main faults of most speakers. We'll show you some things to do and some things not to do.
Oh, you're over there now.
The first
now.
Thing that every speaker should do is to learn the three basic aims of public speaking.
Lie, and lie.
And one, check your zipper.
You must be heard.
John heard?
Two, you must be understood.
Huh? What? What's that?
Three, you must be pleasing.
Do I please you? Do you find me pleasing?
Now remember...
Oh my God.
Well, we're laughing. I mean, I think
haven't
that's hilarious.
I haven't heard that in so long, and... I gotta give a shout out to those guys, Trace Beaulieu, who plays Crow, and Kevin Murphy, who was doing Tom Servo back then. So they're so funny and so brilliant.
And your robots, are they based on people that you or your early collaborators knew or personality
well,
style?
I'll tell you the story of how that happened. Like I said, I used to collage those robots out of found objects. And so I made the puppets. I made Crow and I made Tom Servo and I made Gypsy, or now she's called GPC. And so I built them and enlisted two friends of mine that I knew who were really funny, Trace Beaulieu and J. Elvis Weinstein. And when we did the show locally, they really created those personalities. They really created Crow is Trace Beaulieu and Tom Servo is J. Elvis Weinstein. And so those guys really crafted that whole those identities, I think. And I felt like it's kind of my style to not like interfere with a performer and let that happen, because and it works really good because the performers have to do so many voices and so many things that if you we learned that if you tried to have an extra character-y voice, it was hard to then transition to all the voices they do. So it really became, and that's true still today. All the people that perform Tom Servo, all the people that do Crow are the performers.
Oh, that's great. You know, I think it's a model that perhaps it already happens with the crawls and things that we see on TV, although they're not particularly funny. But it'd be great to use the Mystery Science Theater idea watching a presidential debate or a presidential news conference and have the, you know, have Crow.
Others do it.
I mean,
that
you'd have
really
to be live
fun.
And spontaneous, which is different. But and maybe Twitter is sort of what Mystery Science Theater helped to create.
Well, we have been lucky along the way. Some writers have said that we anticipated social media by the way we react with media. So there was an article in The Hollywood Reporter last year that kind of the reporter kind of made that statement. I go, I guess so.
The kind of snarkiness. But you can't be too negative, right? You can't be too nasty and hostile.
We're companions with the person viewing it. And if you go too cynical too often, people just don't want – it's just like negative people. You don't want to be around them. And that's – there's so many people that riff now and do movie riffing. And when they ask me about it, I go, yeah, don't – you're a companion. You're not a jerk. And so that's the common mistake of a newbie like riffer is just I'm going to be super cynical and that's who I am. And you realize
it's tiresome.
Yeah. So you have to do you don't want to pop the balloon until the end. You want to play with the balloon and you don't want to go to do the cynical jab. Yeah. I tend to say you can do the cynical jab after you've demonstrated you can do a million other different kinds of jokes. So that's kind of just a trick.
That's Joel Hodgson, our guest on Radio Times today, talking about Mystery Science Theater. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Here's a tweet from Amon. I think the MST3K theme song is the greatest thing ever written.
Oh, wow. That's lovely.
Did you have a hand in writing?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I'm so grateful. You know, we've always used a lot of music in Mystery Science Theater and worked with a lot of great talent. Like even the stuff on Netflix now has stuff that was written by Bobby Lopez, who's the writer for Frozen and Frozen 1 and Frozen 2 that's coming out. And he wrote stuff for us. Our only EGOT award winner on our that's worked with us. And Stephen Ormus, who's a wonderful arranger on Broadway, worked with us. So we've always had lots of cool talent. And I found this guy, Charlie Erickson, who's my girlfriend's cousin, who is like the most musical person I ever met. And we sat down, and I kind of sang to him what I thought it was. And obviously, he cleaned it up a bit and made it into a real song. And so we wrote that together, and J. Elvis Weinstein and I wrote the lyrics.
Yeah, and we're going to play that at the end of the hour. Let me play, and this is, we're going back in history, the 1991 episode of MST3K, and here you are performing a song from a movie that you were watching called Pod People, but the lyrics being sung in the movie are apparently unintelligible, so you wrote some lyrics to sound what they thought they were, you thought they were singing in the movie. Let's give it a listen.
With a pickle mind, we kicked a nipple beer. Steady as a goat, we're flying over trout. Ghetto down the highway at the speed of light. All I want to feel now is the wind in my eyes. Sack of monkeys in my pocket. My sister's ready to go. Hear the engines roar now. Idiot control now. Hideous control now. Nitty on the road now. Mini in control. Wheels on fire. Burning rubber tires.
I wish our listeners could have seen you listening to that, just shaking your head. I don't know, feels in shame
like,
or what?
This feels like the Truman Show to me, that there's this stupid, stupid song we did on my show, and now
there
almost 30 years later, we're playing it again as if it has some kind of meaning. It's so silly.
But to me, I always like those misconstrued lyrics, and there are songs I've sung my whole life, and then you find out what the words really are, and you realize... For my whole life, I've been singing the wrong lyrics.
I love that. I love that when you get it wrong. Like, I'm not talking about The Linen, right? That song. Right. Yeah. England Dan and John Ford Coley, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We're almost up at a break here, but you left for a while. You had some creative differences early on.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that was a real tragedy for me. But I was fighting with my partner, Jim Mallon. I think we were talking about doing a feature film, and he kind of wanted to take over the project. He wanted to be the producer and director, and he didn't really ask my opinion about it. And I was the creator of the show and the guy on camera, and yeah, that kind of descended into me leaving and feeling like...
Was that hurtful?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it took years for me to... And it was so public. As you know, I don't come from show business. So to have something so public like that in front of so many people, it was really tough on me. And in a way, for years, I was like a rescue dog, you know, just really hurt and like really frustrated and... Of course, I was grateful as the creator of the show that it kept running, and I felt that it could. But it was really that King Solomon and the baby story to me, where he was going to – I felt he wanted to dig in and fight, and he didn't understand that would wreck the show.
Right.
And so I just said, I'm going to go, and I had a good deal in place, and so it was the thing I had to do. But again, that's what motivated me to want to bring it back.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation again. Joel Hodgson is our guest, the creator of Mystery Science Theater 3000. We've been playing some old clips, kind of, sort of embarrassing our guests. I'm not exactly sure.
I'm proud about it, too. I'm so proud that we're still listening to it and laughing about it.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. And just stay with us. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Artie Moscowen talking with Joel Hodgson, the creator of Mystery Science Theater 3000, which has had multiple lives beginning on UHF, went over to what became Comedy Central, then to Sci-Fi, then there was a Kickstarter campaign, and now it's on Netflix. Hodgson is back on tour with Mystery Science Theater 3000 Live, the great cheesy movie circus tour. It's at the Miriam Theater tonight at 7 o'clock here in Philadelphia. You can join our conversation. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You have a Frank Zappa story. He was a big fan of the show.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing because we would often quote his lyrics and in the context of the show and drop in little references to him. And I got to talk to him, and this is he was pretty sick at that time, and I was thrilled to get to talk to him because I was such a fan. He's a creative hero and a patriot, and I just was amazed that he liked what we did. And I was thinking about this in the context of, you said, the look on my face when I was listening to this, and I said, Frank, what's it like when you hear us referencing your music? And he goes, It's really unsettling. I'm never comfortable with that.
Right. I hate it.
And so that was a little insight into what it's like when you make work and it's reflected back to you. It sometimes catches you off guard, especially in the context. Again, what's so funny is it was so long ago when we did that and, you know, all that stuff. So, yeah.
Were there other people that you parodied that were truly insulted by you taking apart their oeuvre?
Well, I have to say the actors are always really good-natured about it because they all understand this was like 2 days of their life being in one of these bad B-movies. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the producers, I think, one of the guys at Shout Factory, who are my partners with in Mystery Science Theater, he said that he negotiates the deals for the license. And he mm-hmm. said one producer said, "Hey, I know my movie's not Citizen Kane, but did you have to do that to it?" And ultimately he took the money to license it, but he was complaining. But the actors are all really good-natured about it and kind of love that Mystery Science Theater gave a lot of their work a little extra life and more people got to see them.
I read that the little girl in Manos...
Manos, the hands of face, and Jackie Naiman.
Yeah, she has come to some of your events, or she's...
Yeah, she's really outspoken and has kind of adopted her position in kind of this trash cinema world. She was the little girl in Manos, the Hands of Fate, which is considered the worst film ever made.
Oh, even the trailer, which I was looking at yesterday, is just appalling.
And it really was an amazing episode for us and has been a really good thing. But it's there's something about this movie. There's this undercurrent of dread in this movie, and a lot of it has to do with the way it was made. It was made with a particular camera that could only shoot a minute and a half of film at a time and could not record sound. And so it has this kind of big cognitive dissonance to it that is just unbelievable. And it gives you this dread feeling like something really bad is going to happen. And it doesn't because it's ultimately an inept filmmaker, but it has this feeling like, oh no, what's going to happen?
Here's an email from Cameron. I'm a lifelong fan, 35. I've been watching since I was 10. It may be a sacrilegious, but Star Trek, the motion picture, seems like it might be the perfect movie, even though it's totally not a B film. Damn it, Jim. I'm a milkman, not a doctor.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, great idea.
I shouldn't say this. I'm not a Star Trek fan, but nonetheless, I'll
just
leave that out
there.
Well,
we don't have to get into that now. We don't have a lot of time
no,
to
we
dig
don't.
That out. Yeah.
I want to play an episode of Freaks and Geeks, and this is in 2000, and we've been talking about Mystery Science Theater, but you've had some other lives as well.
Yeah.
And you play a character. He's kind of a cool cat who works in a clothing store?
Well, I have to tell you the backstory here, because my friends Paul Feig and Judd Apatow created Freaks and Geeks, and they put me in this goofy. They just kind of said, "We want you in this role with a really bad wig on." And so I said, "Yeah, okay." And so that's how I ended up on Freaks and Geeks.
Well, this is a scene where Sam and Bill, two high school students, they're at a mall. They have to buy some clothes, and you are waiting on them.
Right.
All right, guys. Check it out. It's the latest thing in. It's the hottest thing going in Europe right now.
What is it?
This is a Parisian night suit, and I predict every trend-setting guy in this city's gonna own one.
Wow. Really?
Really is right. Buy this garment, and I guarantee you'll be perceived as a man of distinction by the ladies.
I don't know.
Hey, guys, look at me. You know, I'm not a handsome man, but I learned how to style my hair, started wearing some of these clothes. It's been pretty cool.
And I should say listeners, it's kind of a baby blue jumpsuit.
It's Feig and Judd Apatow making fun of me the whole way through their script. Yeah, and making me read it. Yeah, it was a really funny. And the truth of the matter is I had that jumpsuit and so did Paul Feig. We bonded because in high school we both bought jumpsuits. And now it's... Part of it, too, is I wear a jumpsuit on Mystery Science Theater, and I'll be wearing one tonight at the Miriam.
I'm wondering, because you're back hosting again, correct?
Well, yeah, this is my farewell tour. And, I came back to reinvigorate the brand and bring it back on Netflix and do the Kickstarter and all that and show that the show could kind of live on without me. And so this is kind of the beginning of me kind of bringing in, after this, we'll have a lot of new people. We have a very, very deep bench now of performers and writers and producers for the show. So it's just kind of the beginning of me starting to hand over the reins and saying goodbye to people.
So it's a farewell tour for
you. It's a farewell tour for me. I've done three tours now. The last two times we've been in Philly, I've been at the Keswick, which I was really grateful to get to do. And now we're downtown at the Merriam.
And the first tour was Watch Out for the Snakes tour.
Watch Out for Snakes, yeah.
And this is the Great Cheesy Movie Circus tour.
Yeah. The last tour, first is Watch Out for Snakes. The one after that was the 30th anniversary tour. And now this is my farewell tour. And Jonah's going to come back, who's our host on Netflix. We have 20 feature-length episodes at Netflix, and he's going to do the next tour.
So is this kind of a long goodbye for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'll keep working with the brand, and I love doing that, but I'm 59 years old, and it's like we're bringing in all these young people that kind of refresh all the references and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Do you have to sort of stay in shape to host something
like
this?
Oh, my goodness, yeah. You know, I had to do things like I became a vegan.
Did you?
And, yeah, and I lost 25 pounds and keep eating that way on the road, and I have to do so many things. I have to do my steps. I have to do yoga.
Your 10,000 steps?
I do 10,000 steps. I do yoga, meditate, all that, just so I can keep up and keep working. Because it's a bus tour. It's rock and roll. Like, we're going to get on a bus tonight and go to the next town.
Yeah. How long is the tour? Just
We go until the beginning of December, and then I have a month off, and then we pick up two more months after that. So it's a long tour. It's an 80-city tour.
The long goodbye, then.
It is, yeah, and I'm so thrilled and happy to get to do it. It's a blast, but it's a,
it's a young person's
gig. Yeah, it really is. It's a young person's gig, for sure.
You had mentioned Jerry Seinfeld, just how important he has been for your career and your friends as well. And you did one of those Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. Now, this is from 2012, so it's a long time ago. Yeah. We just wanted to play just about a minute and a half where you're essentially riffing on this decision by, I think it's Heinz Ketchup, that the cap be on the bottom of the jar of ketchup as opposed to the top.
Yeah, we're at the Skylark Diner in Edison, New Jersey. Seinfeld picked out this place for us to meet, and we're like you would hanging out and talking.
Right, and was this kind of spontaneous as well?
Oh, absolutely. This is really a picture of what it's like to hang out with Seinfeld. Really,
let's give it a listen.
All right.
What do you think of this ketchup with the cap on the bottom?
It's great. How many fights did they have over this before someone said, but the ketchup goes to the bottom, put the cap on the bottom?
What about the passing gasp sound problem of the ketchup? Do you think they talk about that? You know. Hey, how's that upside down jar coming along?
It's fantastic, people love it.
Focus groups off the charts. We do have one problem.
What could possibly be the problem?
When the bottle's been sitting upright.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. It's filled with our good ketchup.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, sir, it's not something we've ever faced before in our ketchup bottles.
My wife's picking me up in 15 minutes. Could you get to the point?
He's got to be in a tux. Him and his wife are going to a function.
Right? Yeah, he's putting on his cufflinks. He's doing his tie. Looking at the opera tickets.
It's this, sir.
Sounds normal to me. Sounds like our new upside-down bottle extruding our good ketchup.
I love that clip, and in part because I love hearing the two of you just laugh spontaneously, and it is extremely contagious, as I think laughter is.
Well, I just always think when I hear that how much I admire that guy and how much I like him, and he has just been such a good thing in my life. Just those doing stuff like that, he's been so gracious and nice. So yeah, I appreciate it.
And also the improv part of it. I mean, where in improv, you know, you're with your partner and you're going, but you don't know exactly where you're going.
Oh, yeah. And you can see that's the beginning of comedy. That's how everything happens, is just talking together and being with people you like. It's, you know, you have to, that's how, where comedy comes from. You don't create comedy with strangers you don't like. You create it with people you like being with and know you. And so that's kind of the secret of it, is there's a trust thing there that has to be there for it to happen. And, but yeah, that's the heart and soul of it right there, is just people talking, making each other laugh, and then going, hey, you know, this is a bit. You know, right. This is a bit. And so then you could see him doing that bit in stand-up, too, if he wanted to. And when we wrote his HBO special, that's how it happened. We hung out. We'd go shopping. We'd walk through the grocery store and just kind of say, what is Cookie Crisp cereal? Why are they giving people cookies for breakfast? You know, and so stuff like that.
That is Joel Hodgson, our guest on Radio Times today. We've been talking about the creation of Mystery Science Theater 3000, something he did back in the late 1980s. And he has brought the show to Philadelphia again. It's at the Miriam Theater tonight. It's called The Great Cheesy Movie Circus Tour. You can give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Many ways to join our conversation here on Radio Times, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I describe you as I mean, you're a comedian, you're a comic, and yet you were telling me before the air, before going on, that there's only really one funny joke you've ever actually written in your life.
Well, when I was a stand-up, I did a prop act. I'm very visually oriented, and so I only had one joke, really. The rest was all based on props. And if you look at Mystery Science Theater, it's so much of it is about springboarding off of the picture and what people are saying. And the only joke I ever wrote was, sometimes I go into my own little world, but that's okay. They know me there.
I like that joke, by the way.
Thank you. And somebody took it. David Lee Roth from Van Halen took that joke and did it on TV and in Rolling Stone. And then somebody commandeered it, and now it's on aprons and posters and hot pads and hot mitts. And it's really funny. The only joke I ever wrote is now this garden industry for somebody out there.
And how do you stay fresh?
Oh, my goodness. Well, to me, the whole secret of it is working with new people and working with these people. Like, I'm 59 years old, and all the people who are writing the show now are in their 30s, and the people who are on the road and performing Tom and Crow and GPC are that age. And that's kind of where I was when I started Mystery Science Theater. That's the age I was at. And so I'm really queuing off them a lot of the time and deferring to them. There's a fair amount of references they bring to the show that I have to kind of school myself on and go look up on Wikipedia and go, what is this? And that's just the nature of it, because I grew up in a time when you'd see these old comedians age out, and it was really depressing, like watching you know, a lot of people love Johnny Carson and Ed McMahon, but I remember towards the end going, wow, these guys are really old. Maybe they should pop new people in. And so I didn't want to ever be in that position. So that's part of why I want to get off, you know, kind of go out and do this farewell thing.
Well, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for Mystery Science Theater.
Cheers, Marty. It was so great, and thank you again.
You're very welcome. And again, Joel Hodgson, our guest, Mystery Science Theater. We've been talking about that on the air. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, and the show is produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. And I should add that Mystery Science Theater at the Miriam Theater tonight at 7 o'clock. I do want to close things out with the theme music, the opening theme music for Mystery Science Theater 3000. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
In the not-too-distant future, next Sunday A.D., there was a guy named Joel, not too different from you or me. He worked at his Monic Institute, just another face in a red jumpsuit. He did a good job cleaning up the place, but his boss didn't like him, so they shot him into space. We'll send the cheesy movies, the worst we can find. He'll have to sit and watch them all, then we'll monitor his mind. Now keep in mind, Joe can't control where the movies begin or end, because he used those special parts.